Time to pull up a chair and talk some Dynasty football. I am your host, JJ Wenner, and this is the Rider Dynasty Podcast. Joining us tonight is Big Daddy Don Detweiler. Don, that was a long week. How are you doing, buddy?
Oh, man. We earned our bourbon this weekend, man. It was a long week coming down the stretch here. The kids have been working us, but you know what? That they deserve to. It's been a heck of a year for absolutely everybody.
100%. And somebody here is having a heck of a year, but in a good way. Matthew Walters of the new Next Man Up pod. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing quite well. I'm excited for the Next Man Up pod. It's going to be fun. And all things are going well here in Texas.
Fantastic. Now, before we get into tonight's pod, do me a favor. Hit subscribe and leave us a review. Follow us on Twitter if you could, at Ride or Dynasty. And if you get a chance, check out our website, RiderDynasty.com, for all of our articles. Now on to the main topic. Last week, we completed a two-round mock draft. If you missed it, I suggest listening to that episode first. Tonight, we do what we love. Dive into the later round talent and see what gems we can dig up. Now, gentlemen, let's start at the QB position. In the first two rounds, we saw the main quarterbacks obviously go Lawrence, Lance, Fields, Wilson, and Jones. And Don, you took Davis Mills with the last pick in the second round because of his starting potential. Looking at the rest, Matthew, can you give me one guy who I should keep on a speed dial for the end of my roster?
The only other one I'm particularly interested in is Kellen Mond. Vikings took him. Kind of a work in progress there. He's obviously going to be the backup, but if the starter goes down, could step into a starting role, and they're trying to build for the future. So interesting stuff there in Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a good room to walk into. Sitting behind Kirk Cousins, I don't think the bar for athleticism is too high. And I think Kellen Mond, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the Debbie Dirtbag said that he could be a Dak Prescott-like quarterback. But we'll see what happens. Don, anybody else who you're looking at?
It never hurts to take a shot at guys who have a chance at a road to succession here. And if you're in the back of the third, and in this year, the third back of the third is kind of no man's land, really, because it's been such a strange landing spot year. Kyle Trask is an interesting guy to take a peek at. The scouts don't really like him because he's not particularly mobile, but in Tampa Bay, as the understudy to one not particularly mobile Tom Brady, with a dynamite offensive line that they have there, you've got play callers who know how to handle a guy who doesn't move around a tremendous amount. You've got an offensive line that is used to blocking for a guy that doesn't run all over the place. And the things that Trask does do is he throws with touch, he throws downfield effectively with good angle and good arc and adequate downfield velocity. So, you know, at some point, we've been saying this forever, I feel like, but at some point, Tom Brady's going to have to probably give up. I don't know. Who knows anymore? But if there's going to be an heir apparent, it seems to be Trask.
If I'm not mistaken, Tom Brady is a Highlander, so somebody will have to. You know, there can only be one. Wait, that's not how it goes. There can be only one.
There can be only one.
There can be only one. All right. So now, looking at the running backs, in the first two rounds, we saw Najee, Javonte, Travis Etienne, Michael Carter, and Trey Sermon all go in the first 24 picks. It gets a little bare after this. Don, who do you have as a priority add in these later rounds at running back?
Okay. In the later rounds here, there's some guys that do have interesting roads here. One of them that I particularly like, and I liked in the pre-draft process, was Ramondre Stevenson out of Oklahoma. Big dude, power back, the kind of guy that ideally you want on the goal line. And in New England here, more so once Cam hangs it up, I feel like this guy is going to be the hammer in the goal line and kind of step in and be at least in the mix for their RB1, if not their RB2 short yardage goal line kind of guy. He showed some versatility at Oklahoma after he transferred in from JUCO, and I feel like there's opportunity here for him because realistically, there's only really one other legit running back up there in Harris. Sonny Michel cannot stay healthy and continues to not stay that way, and they didn't pick up his fifth-year option, so he'll be a free agent next year anyway. So it seems like Ramondre Stevenson is probably the next man up.
Matthew, do you have your eye on anyone?
My eye kind of goes to Javian Hawkins, who got picked up by Atlanta. He's a smaller guy, but there's not a whole lot of competition there in Atlanta for sure. Mike Davis is ahead of him, older guy, did well when CMC went down, but's never really done anything else in his career. So there's definitely an opportunity there. And you're going to be getting him fourth round pretty much at the earliest. I think I've seen him go in the fifth round in some of my leagues that have five rounds. And so, I mean, you can take worse shots than the opportunity. Now, kind of the knock against him is he is a smaller guy who probably going to take a little bit of beating. I'm looking at it. He's only 182 pounds. That's kind of scary for a running back for sure. But the opportunity will be there. He's just got to make the most of it.
Now, Matthew, I like you and I respect you, but there is no Mike Davis slander allowed on this podcast.
Hey, it's not slander. It's just stating some of the facts. I'm actually quite excited for Mike Davis this year.
As am I. Who else should we be looking at, though? Just those two? There's so many guys. What's up with the guy drafted by the Vikings, Kenny Nwangwu? Does anybody know anything about him, Don?
I didn't follow him closely in the pre-draft process because I didn't think he was going to get a priority landing spot. And I feel like the backfield there, I mean, look, this is entirely predicated on Dalvin Cook having something happen to him. Because if it doesn't, forget it. So, I mean, I don't see a tremendous amount of opportunity there for them unless something would happen to Cook. But then again, Cook's got a lot of touches. He's into, what, going to be year six in his career? Just completing year five, even though he missed the 1 year with the ACL. Still, for a guy that runs so violently and has such a high volume of touches, it never hurts to take an opportunity there with the Minnesota backfield. Although we've seen this show before, haven't we?
Mike Boone was there for quite a while.
I feel like this guy could be one that kind of breaks your heart if you aim too high.
And what I will say about Kane, he's an athletic freak. I'm looking at his metrics right now. He's in the 91st percentile spark score. He ran a 4.37, and that's adjusted 40-yard dash. At his pro day, it was a 4.32. So he's fast and athletic, so there's definitely an opportunity there.
How big is he?
He's 6 foot, 210 pounds. That's not terrible for
no,
for
that's a NFL back. Size.
Yeah. Man. So, I mean, there's stuff. He's older. He didn't really produce in college for that. I don't know why. If I'm being honest, I haven't watched a whole lot of Iowa State football. So,
how dare you, man? How dare you? What about, guys, what about Kenny Gainwell? All I could hear about was Kenny Gainwell. I mean, he goes to the Eagles. I mean, Don, you and I were talking today. You talk about bad landing spots. It seems everybody in this draft ended up, in at least running back-wise, except for, what, your guy?
Najee Harris, yeah. He's in probably the best spot in the draft for running backs.
Michael Carter.
Yep, he's got an opportunity.
Pretty wide open. Trey Sermon has opportunity behind a good line.
Yep.
Outside of that, everybody else is trash.
Let's just say they're blocked, right?
They're blocked. So Gainwell's now behind Miles Sanders. They also just signed Kerryon Johnson.
Woo!
Boston Scott is there. Is this just another muddled Doug Peterson backfield? And Doug Peterson's not even there to muddle it.
Yeah, it's such a strange deal, right? We really don't know what Miles Sanders is, first of all, because in 2 years of his career thus far, he hasn't been able to complete either one completely healthy and play a full 16, now going to be 17, so the chances of him completing a season are even lower. Gainwell would be a priority add for me simply because of Sanders' injury history, and that offensive line in Philly has to get better. The addition of Landon Dickerson is very interesting there at center. The guy could have been a first-rounder if he didn't tear up a knee for the second time. Not the same knee. He's now damaged both knees, so that's interesting. Poor guy in his college career has gone through two knees and two ankles. Go Eagles and drafting, let's be nice, dinged up players. But when he's healthy, he's got freak athlete potential there at the center position. So that offensive line could get better. And Gainwell was dynamic beyond belief at Memphis. Another one of these high-value Memphis running backs. So, I mean, maybe he takes it over. I don't know. And a lot of guys had Devy shares of him. He definitely peaked in the bowl game against Penn State. He was absolutely untouchable. So there's hope there, right? And if Sirianni is coming out of the Colts system and is true to what the Colts system is, there's room for two running backs.
Yeah, I really liked Gainwell coming out before the draft. I think he really got punished not playing last year, sitting out. I've listened to a few people talk about, and for a Memphis player, you just can't do that and still expect to be drafted highly. So I think he got kind of dinged a little bit. So while, yes, he's a fifth-round pick, he's a pretty good fifth-round pick, in my opinion. If he played, probably goes higher than that. They just didn't see anything last year.
You know, Matthew, I understand what you're saying. I've heard that before. I've heard it about Bryce Love, right? Bryce Love would be a first round pick if he didn't get hurt. You hear it a lot. But what I always kind of see, the NFL takes a guy pretty much where they deserve to be taken. Now, not always in the right order, but at least in the general idea, right? At least the round is normally right.
And that's fair. My only critique, I guess, of that would be we've never had a COVID-filled year before. This is kind of a uncharted territory for everyone. So,
yeah,
I still, true. I mean, the NFL's probably still spot on with everything, but who knows? Maybe I've seen stuff where the Senior Bowl guys have probably been taken higher and stuff like that. And people were going, or I forget the team, but there was one team that pretty much drafted from two colleges. And that was because they were in the vicinity of who they could go visit because of COVID. So I think this year kind of muddied the waters and changed things from the norm.
Yeah, absolutely. The Pittsburgh Steelers did that to an extent with Penn State and A&M. They two players out of A&M drafted, and then they, for absolute fact, I know they drove up to State College to talk to the coaches for Pat Freiermuth. So there is a certain amount of regency, and Memphis isn't all that far from Philadelphia, so it's entirely possible that scouts or somebody in the organization took a roll down there to see what's going on. This year, I know for several outlets have reported that most pro teams didn't get full medicals on guys until about 6 weeks before the draft, which is a second in NFL terms to go through the total cacophony of available players. So who knows exactly how much intel there was. Yeah, I know. Look at me. I used an SAT word.
Nice. Another big name heading into more last year, faded this year, but still thought that he was going to go in a decent spot. Chuba Hubbard ended up falling to the Panthers. CMC backup. I mean, we know how great previous backups were. Mike Davis. Does he follow in that role, Matthew?
Yeah, I think he steps into that backup role, but we know the backup role there is only if CMC gets hurt, because otherwise CMC's out there 90% of the time. This was actually a little weird for me. I did think Chuba was going to not fall this far in the draft. Maybe with him, it kind of was that, I believe it was an ankle injury last year that he dealt with throughout the year, and if teams, like Don said, that they weren't getting their medicals until 6 weeks before, which that's not enough time to go through all the draft prospects' medicals. That may have scared some teams away, but it's a heck of a landing spot, and if CMC gets hurt again, I mean, that's a little iffy on his injury history as well. There's definitely opportunity that could happen.
Yeah, there's an odd deal here with Chuba Hubbard, because this is the rare case where we say he stayed too long. Had he come out last year, he's probably drafted higher, and he's at least in that conversation with that second, third round crew. This year, he comes back, gets dinged up, is in and out, eventually opts out, and doesn't do the one thing he returned to show, which is that he can catch the ball out of the backfield. And I think that was the major knock, because, first of all, he just wasn't asked to do that in his first couple of years. And then this year didn't get to show that he could. So there's no tape.
All right, so looking through the rest, Jamar Jefferson, Khalil Herbert, Kylan Hill, Larry Roundtree. All right, so we're pretty good now with running backs.
We're pretty good. The only other name there to consider really is Herbert, because he's probably going to be the primary backup to Montgomery in Chicago.
Over Tariq?
Assuming Tariq's healthy and stays healthy and all that good stuff.
All right, well, let's take a look at the wide receivers. So the wide receivers, as of always, is the deepest class to go. So going in the first two rounds, we had Chase, Bateman, Devonta Smith, followed by Waddle, Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, Terrace Marshall, Dyami Brown, Kadarius Toney, Amari Rodgers, and Dwayne Eskridge. That's a lot of receivers. If you're looking at round three, Matthew, which receiver would you take in round three who didn't just get drafted?
In round three, it's worth taking a shot. You didn't say Amon-Ra, did you? Sorry.
I did not.
That's who I would probably go with if he's available in round three, just because Detroit wide receivers, there's nothing there currently. So the opportunities to be had. He's had a high pedigree. I was actually surprised he didn't get drafted a little bit earlier. So that's who I would go with in round three, is Amon-Ra St. Brown, if he's there.
Yeah, Matthew, Ryan is really big on Amon-Ra St. Brown. You know my distaste for the St. Brown brothers. I think they're all going to end up about the same. Don, who are you looking at in the third round?
Third round, I mean, we're into speculation land here big time, but you can always look to teams that didn't do a tremendous amount in terms of free agency bringing in wide receivers or have a relative shortage on their team, and Nico Collins fits into this bracket here. Nico Collins is now a Houston Texan, and though they have a very interesting quarterback situation in that somebody's going to be slinging them the rock, but I don't know who exactly. Maybe Tyrod Taylor, which probably isn't great. Maybe it's Davis Mills. We'll find out. That could get interesting, but this is a guy who has a road to starting. So if you can get a guy who has a road to starting in the third round, there was talk that he could have been a first-round wide receiver. McShay was big on him coming out of the draft process, and a few others, because bigger kid, outside receiver with decent speed, good ups, more of a jump ball guy. But, hey, you only need one to actually matter, so especially if it's a best ball league. So he's a guy that's worth the flyer.
Yeah, you're talking about a guy who's 6'4", 215. This is a big dude. He can run a 4.4. You know, he has the hops over a 37-inch vertical. He's definitely somebody who can shine now that he's away from Michigan. And that, I don't even know how to describe that quarterback play.
Yeah, the Wolverines were not good.
No, it's pretty abysmal.
Atrocious.
That abysmal in the big mitten.
Those are better words.
Matthew, who's another guy we're looking at in the wide receiver room?
Well, if we're staying still in the third round,
we can go a little bit later.
We're going to go on to my favorite one, Jonathan Adams. I mean, Everyone at Rider Dynasty thinks knows how I feel about him. I have.
Should I start playing some romantic music for you?
Might
you
as
young
well.
Man.
I do have a love affair.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah, so I do have quite the love affair with Jonathan Adams. I was holding out hope that he would get drafted, but he did not. He went undrafted. But then he went to just about the best place you could go for an undrafted wide receiver, to the Detroit Lions, where there is literally no one ahead of him. I know I just mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown, who I do think will be starting alongside Jonathan Adams when the season starts. But Jonathan Adams, watching him on film, reminded me a lot of Dez Bryant. And as someone that I'm a Cowboys fan, I've watched a lot of Dez Bryant. That's exciting to me. Now, I'm not saying he is Dez. Obviously, he went undrafted. Dez went in the first round. But the potential's there. The landing spot is good. He balled out at a small school, which I think scared a lot of teams away. So that's who I'm excited about.
Yeah, Arkansas, pride of Arkansas State, right?
That is correct.
That's right.
Dynamic offense they have down there.
You're right about the draft capital invested into Adams not being there. But we have to pay attention to the fact that the Dez Bryant-type wide receiver is not getting drafted anymore. They're letting them fall further and further in the draft. The NFL has definitely fallen in love with a different type of receiver than what we used to see. I don't know if Jonathan Adams will be as good as Dez. That's a pretty high bar, Hall of Fame level to reach. But I have high hopes, and if he is going to show up and get a chance, there is no better place than the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, absolutely. The guy from the same vein, Tevin Grimes, is another interesting one. Same kind of deal, not absolutely blinding speed, but a big dude, kind of outside possession type receiver, same deal. Fell very far. So he's another guy to look at late. I have two favorites that are kind of hanging around here. I like Cornell Powell from Clemson, and the fact that he went to Andy Reid's system there in Kansas City means that a late round flyer on him is definitely something that's justified, because with Sammy Watkins leaving and them trying to fill that spot internally with Byron Pringle and Robinson, I forget what his first name is, we don't know what that's going to do, but we do know that it probably shouldn't be Mecole Hardman. So that leaves opportunity for Cornell Powell to step in and play some. And he was utilized extensively on that Clemson offense. Trevor Lawrence found him routinely, make some circus catches, and is an absolute burner. And speaking of absolute burners, there's Anthony Swartz, who went to the Cleveland Browns. Kid from Auburn has legit Olympic track speed. The knock on him is that he runs every route at top speed. And if you watch the film, it's kind of comical to watch him just blow through people on go routes, because that's really what he did. But he still needs refinement. But if you're looking for somebody that's going to take the top off an offense, he's your guy.
Mr. Detweiler, somewhere at Cornell University, do you think there's an engineer by the name of Clemson Powell?
I hope so. That would be so funny.
Who's getting drafted in like an engineering fantasy league somewhere right now?
And in the fifth round, structural engineer. Clemson Powell.
Clemson Powell.
He goes by Tiger, though.
Wow. I wasn't ready for that one. Ooh, sometimes a pun catches you off guard. Oof, that's like a body blow in boxing. Like, I feel like winded after that one. Anybody else we want to talk about in this room? Matthew, like, this is where you throw your Hail Marys, your 10th round sleeper.
10th round sleeper, Tamarian Terry makes me interested. Not the best landing spot in Seattle, but I was quite high on him coming out. I know there's some issues there, but the potential's also there. Big guy, fast, made plays at FSU, was pretty much the best thing on that FSU offense the past couple of years, so maybe.
Yeah, my favorite guy that fell to a bad spot that had been kind of floating around Devy circles and stuff was Seth Williams from Auburn. Big dude, very physical wide receiver. Unfortunately, Auburn had terrible quarterback play last year. And you saw that play out as a result of getting Gus Malzahn fired and the whole new coaching staff brought into Auburn. And, man, him ending up in Denver just stinks. It's a shame. But soon, there's going to be some openings there when Patrick moves on, or if KJ Hamler can't stay healthy or just gets outcompeted because he showed little to nothing last year. There's an opportunity for Seth Williams to come in and sneak that third role. So if you're in a deep league, he will be available late because of how blocked he is in Denver with interesting quarterback play. He's a kid that was really talented that I thought probably deserved a better spot.
Somebody who I heard about through Matt Waldman, Josh Imatorbebe, wide receiver for the Jaguars. He's another guy who is just a really big, strong wide receiver. Something that, as we said, is falling out of style, but he's pretty amazing as a physical player, and I'm interested to see what he can do with Trevor Lawrence down there if he gets a shot as a possession type player. Now on to the most unsexy of positions, unless you're in a tight end premium league. The tight end. Obviously, the only two in the first two rounds were Pat Freiermuth and Kyle Pitts. Now, Kyle Pitts is generational. Is there anybody left who might even make an impact? Don?
Yeah, I mean, you can look at Hunter Long. It's possible that Tommy Tremble has more athleticism than he really showed at Notre Dame. He definitely has the measurables and is faster than is given credit for. It's just because they have a dynamic freshman in Myers there that he didn't get the ball more often. So it's possible that Tremble could get more value for you in that Carolina offense. But, I mean, Hunter Long is probably the best of the rest here in this deal.
Matthew, any thoughts on the tight end position?
I would argue that Brevin Jordan's probably the best of the rest from just an athletic standpoint and an opportunity standpoint. Houston tight ends are not really a thing. He could easily step in and be the guy at tight end there. Now, obviously, the Houston QB and team as a whole, who knows really what's gonna happen there, but I do like taking some late round flyers on Brevin Jordan and just seeing what happens.
Yeah, Jordan is definitely the new style tight end. He's your athletic pass catching tight end. Don't ask him to block because he's not gonna. But I mean, maybe he falls down and gets in the way, sort of. But he's definitely athletic enough, and there was some pre-draft talk of him possibly sneaking into the second, which didn't quite pan out. But it's a strange year. Who knows?
So you went to the Jared Cook School of Run Blocking.
What was that number? 0.13 or something like that?
0.5. There we go. 0.5% or whatever. Yikes. Kenny Yeboah went to the Jets, local kid. I know they have a future Hall of Famer blocking his path, but maybe in some two tight end sets, he might get a little bit of playing time.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I mean, that two tight end set is all the rage in the NFL these days. And the Jets did so much more for Zach Wilson immediately than they ever did for Sam Darnold in all of his years combined, that that offense got very interesting very fast. So it's entirely possible that Yeboah could show us something.
I feel so bad for Sam Darnold. I think I said this on the last pod as well. I think I might say this on every pod. What they just gave to Wilson in one draft is more than that young man got
ever.
Absolutely ever. He just
such a shame.
Seeing ghosts.
Man.
I truly hope he's sitting in Carolina, just happy that he's in Carolina. But there has to be a little part of him that's looking up there into the at the, what the Jets did and be like, hey.
Not fair. Not fair is what he's
Where
saying.
Where was this the guys, past few years?
So here's my question. Who, in a draft of bad landing spots, what was the worst landing spot for a player that we were so excited for? And when they got drafted, we were just like, ugh.
I'm going to go with the most obvious one with Travis Etienne, because I was thinking the Jets are going to take him. He's going to be the man in what's going to be a really fun offense. And then at 25, we get the Jags with Etienne like, ah, really?
Yeah, and that's kind of a double because you're like, Etienne went to the Jags. And a lot of people had James Robinson and were like, Etienne went to the Jags. Yeah, and now he's going to be stuck in a timeshare rather than feasting.
On the bonus, you can probably pick him up at a discount.
Oh, it's as a James Robinson owner in very many leagues in which I made some trades that do not look great in hindsight, I'm probably not selling him for the asking price anymore. I'm just waiting and seeing. Now, if someone still happens to have him that picked him up on waivers last year or in the fourth round or something like that, maybe you can take a shot at sending that third round pick to them and seeing what they think. Who knows?
One thing about Urban Meyer in his college time, he's used multiple running backs and gotten quality yardage out of them. His time at Utah did that. He definitely did that at Florida and even at Ohio State. So it's entirely possible that both of them get utilized quite often. A lot of the post-draft news conferences focused around the old Percy Harvin role for Etienne, which is really exciting because that involves a lot of receiving. And, you know, they're in fantasy land here where we exist now in PPR formats. That's where a lot of the point value is, especially with a guy with Etienne's linear speed. That's interesting and doesn't really cut into Robinson's timeshares.
Doesn't everything cut into a timeshare?
Yeah,
though?
It does. I've tried to be happy.
You tried to be happy. We're not going to be happy. They have a lot of weapons on the outside already. I don't know if they need another one sliding out to help Etienne. Matthew, in your opinion, who had the absolute worst landing spot?
The absolute worst landing spot. It's actually a tough question. I know most people jump at Rashad Bateman at saying, oh, Baltimore can't pass. I actually kind of like the landing spot for Bateman. I mean, there really isn't any wide receivers to compete with there. He's pretty much the number one target already. Yeah, it's a low passing offense, but you're getting all the targets, so who cares? Personally, I think it was Trey Sermon with San Francisco, and I know we talked about this on the last pod, but I really don't like that landing spot at all. I know it's great as an offense and running backs in general, but it's always been a timeshare of running backs. 1 week, two runs for him, but Mostert has the hot hand. The next week, Trey Sermon, 200 yards, and Mostert sitting in the bench. You just never know. It's always a coin flip. You just can't rely on the consistency there.
Yeah, I wonder if more of that inconsistency came from just the repetitive injuries suffered over the years by San Francisco backs and the lack of a consistently healthy option. It seems every year you went through different seasons within the season. For San Francisco running backs, you would have Breida and then Mostert, and you know, you just sort of go through the different seasons there. I feel good about Sermon. I think if they have a healthy back, we're going to see a 60-40 split between him and Wilson or Mostert, whichever one is healthy. That's my thought.
That's definitely fair. It's a fair way to think about it.
Now, my worst landing spot, what I think is the worst landing spot, or one of the worst. You guys named some bad ones as well. Kyle Pitts. going to Atlanta. I understand everybody's happy. Kyle Pitts is generational. He's a fantastic player. I have voiced that I have some doubts about a young tight end instantly being given that kind of accolades, but understandable. But he's going to a Falcons team that has an aging QB. They have an aging star wide receiver. They have Ridley, who's awesome as well. But, you know, Julio's almost finished. Mike Davis is getting older. They have Hayden Hurst, who won't really block the path, but he's still there. I just don't know how much faith I have in an offensive talent on a bad fading team. Like, that seems like a recipe to end up with, like, a player who gets disappointed. He wants to get traded. I just think that this might turn into a bad situation if they can't figure out how to move on from Ryan in a seamless transition.
That's definitely a fair way to think about it. A lot of people, I mean, Kyle Pitts is pretty much the tight end one in fantasy right now. A lot of people not trading him straight up for Kittle or Kelsey or Waller. And so there's a lot of disappointment ahead, I think, for people, at least in year one. Now, I think Kyle Pitts is going to be great in the future, but year one, I mean, who knows? A lot of mouths.
The big question, definitely. The big question is, does he wind up being the really good player on a really bad team forever? And it's got that stink about it, right? Because the quarterback there isn't going to stay there forever. He's probably there for another 2 years till they get out of the cap nightmare that it is to cut him and then try to eat that dead money. They're kind of stuck with their contracts until Julio's done and until the quarterback's done. So it's one of those deals where I guess the best route was to surround the current talent with even more talent. But boy, that defense isn't any good either. So I don't know. I'm glad that we're not worried about real competing in football, because we're just worried about the stats, and I think the stats are going to be there. But in terms of, like, real competing?
Which player had the best landing spot? Matthew, I'll let you go first.
Best landing spot? Personally, probably Najee Harris. Not that running back room wasn't great until he got there. I know there's concerns about the line and stuff like that, but dude's pretty much walking into 250 plus carries, and they do like to pass to the running backs there in Pittsburgh as well, so he's gonna get some receptions. I mean, that's a heck of a landing spot for a running back.
Yeah, I just picked him up in my league of record, and I couldn't be happier. Perfect landing spot. I don't think there was a player meant for a situation more than that, except Adrian Peterson as a rookie going to the Steelers would have been perfect. But whatever. Don,
boy,
who do you have?
You know, we spent all this time talking about guys landing in terrible spots. There's a couple guys who ended up in really good spots for them. I love Elijah Moore in the Jets offense. He's going to be so interesting with what they're going to do in the existing wide receivers there, because he brings the dynamic element that all the rest of the guys just don't have. So you can do so much with winning by formation. He's going to get covered up in targets. He ended up in a really great spot. And for a guy that kind of went through it and had to sit to the second round, boy, that worked out.
Yeah, another player who I think landed in probably the absolute perfect spot for him would be Trey Lance, going to San Francisco. You have Trey Lance, who people underestimate his passing ability. They think he's all run. You're going to see what he can do in a Kyle Shanahan offense. And that offense with a mobile quarterback could be bananas.
Could be video game numbers.
Yeah. It could be ridiculous if the potential lives up to what they think it is.
I'm just very excited for Trey Lance's opportunity. I took him over Lawrence in a league at the 1-1 because I love his landing spot so much more with Kyle Shanahan than, unfortunately, Trevor Lawrence going to the Jags with Urban Meyer, who is not my favorite coach.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that landing spot. They've got a Pro Bowl center. They've got a Pro Bowl left tackle. And on any given year, any one of the other three offensive linemen could be in the consideration. You've got a stable of effective running backs. You've got two really good young wide receivers and a guy who for reals might be the best tight end for real tight end in football. If that's not a recipe for a breakout year from a young quarterback and a guy landing in a good spot, boy, I don't know what is.
And a terrific defense to keep them in games.
Yep.
Yeah. He definitely had the best landing spot out of all the QBs. But really, I think all the QBs had pretty good landing spots, at least the top five. I mean, they're all looking at the potential to be starting year one and being the guy going forward. So I really like all their landing spots.
So of the five quarterbacks, though, is there any one of them that landed in a spot that has a glimmer of concern for you that you're just worried about the fit?
Wilson, I am worried about. And I think the truth is a lot of fantasy players and dynasty players are as well. I've been in a lot of drafts and he is going fourth in every draft consistently. And it's generally Lawrence, Lance, Fields, Harris, Pitts, then Wilson. So I don't know. There is not a lot of confidence in his ability to make the Jets offense work. I think that might be more of a reflection of the Jets themselves and how poor the organization is viewed by most football fans. But I think I almost called him Kyle Wilson again. I think Zach Wilson has the best opportunity to disappoint.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree, but kind of for different reasons. I mean, not necessarily the Jets being such a poorly run franchise, but I was just never sold on Zach Wilson's ability to begin with. I thought he kind of came out of nowhere this year. Yeah, he made some amazing throws and he looked fantastic, but the competition he was playing against in college was just not there. I mean, obviously the same can be said for Trey Lance playing at the FCS level, but his landing spot was just so far and away better that you're not arguing that.
Yeah, you guys aren't wrong. Our own Debbie Dirtbag swears up and down that Zach Wilson should be the quarterback one, but that's not playing out in drafts as we're seeing it. The guy I'm worried about is Fields, and it has nothing to do with Fields and everything to do with the Bears. I'm worried that Matt Nagy is going to come in. He took back play calling, which didn't go well the first time he had it. He's now taking back play calling. Hopefully he's going to turn himself into some kind of quarterback whisperer again, maybe. And when he's out on his ear after year one, then it's a whole new regime comes in and we start the cycle of musical offensive coordinator. And before we know it, Fields is out of the league, never having had a real chance to learn an offense that was designed for him and actually succeed.
Jason Campbell, when he came into the league with the Redskins, the football team now, thankfully, he had six coordinators in his first 5 years, 5 and 6, something crazy like that. Every year he was learning something new. And eventually people thought he was just a terrible quarterback when he was just he was a gamer. He was a gamer and he was able to take in all that information and still like be a middling level quarterback every year.
Yeah, that,
you know,
it's just a tough position when you're changing offensive coordinators that often. So hopefully that doesn't end up for Fields, but the possibility is definitely there.
Yeah, guys, and it goes to show when you're in a Devy league and you're looking so far out, you're looking at these five-star guys coming out of big programs and you're falling over trying to get them, remember that it doesn't always mean that okay, maybe you got the guy who's going to be 1-1. That team is 1-1 for a reason. So it may be better to have the guy that goes 1-3. But we're in a game that emphasizes talent and potential. And I'm guilty of this all the time. Hope springs eternal in my world when it comes to NFL prospects. Probably to a fault. So just use this as a cautionary tale. We had these two can't-miss guys, and now here we're talking about how they could miss.
So between us, we've participated in a bunch of different drafts already, rookie drafts, at least the first few rounds. 1-1 in a regular non-Devy league has always been considered like the most tradable asset. Have you seen 1-1 traded a lot in non-multiple copy leagues?
I've been in three drafts thus far. It's been floated in every draft, seriously floated, not just like, yo, I'm listening to offers. I traded it in one. That league was Devy depleted, so you have to take that with a grain of salt.
And you got a great deal for the
I
one
did.
One,
I got
which
bowled over.
Which should be Pitts, but you ended up getting two Devy slots, a first and a second?
3 seconds.
A first and 3 seconds?
Yeah.
Or just 3 seconds?
A first next year, 3 seconds, two this year, one next, and two Devy slots.
Yeah, and that all depends on how you value Devy slots, but
that's,
you and I are in agreement that those are like late first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's quite a haul. That's quite a haul. What about you, Matthew?
Yeah, I actually had the 101 in one of my leagues and was, you know, made it known that I could be moved off of this, but pretty much no one, at least in that league, was willing to come up to make it worth my time to trade out of that position. Yeah, I had offers, but none of them were great. It'd be like the 108 or 109, and a second round pick was kind of like the best offers I was getting, and that wasn't worth it to me, especially with it being a 2 QB league and being QB needy. So.
Yeah, and I turned back an offer of 2 firsts and a second for the 101 because I was so quarterback needy.
Yeah, it's hard to replace. I can't remember a draft where there was so much hope about 4 or 5 QBs. I mean, that's a lot of QBs to go in the first. So I know some of us are going to be disappointed. And it's probably going to be 3 out of the 5 that are going to disappoint. If you had to name the two who aren't going to disappoint, who are the two who are going to make it out of Fields, Lawrence, Lance, Wilson, and Jones?
The two that are going to make it?
The two with the best careers.
I'd probably go Lawrence and probably Trey Lance, just for all the reasons we've kind of laid out already. The if factor for everywhere else is just enough to, bad things can happen.
Don?
I'm going to go Lawrence, and I'm going to say Jones is going to make it. He's going.
Wow.
The kid, okay. When every interview you see with him, every time anyone talks to him, the kid's just got it. There's never a moment that's too big for him. And every time the lights were on him, his star just continued to ascend.
Yeah, not the greatest physical specimen.
No, there's some unfortunate pitchers that verify that.
But he can throw the ball with accuracy and touch.
And timing.
And he's going to the Patriots.
Yeah,
I hate the Patriots.
Oh, we were watching the draft in our Rider Dynasty group chat the whole time we're going that Darth Hoodie's sitting back there going, these are not the quarterbacks you're looking for.
Yeah, that was a great, great landing spot for Mac Jones.
We can all be happy, though, because JJ did threaten to shut down the whole works here at Rider Dynasty if Fields ended up a Patriot, and that didn't happen.
That is true. I did post that in the Slack, that everything would be shut down immediately. Immediately. No discussions. Just done.
Thank God that didn't happen.
I was serious, too. I was pretty serious. I might have quit football if Fields went too. the Patriots. Wow, you got me fired up now, Don. All right, gentlemen. It's time for tags. Let the riders know where they can find you and share your any final thoughts that you may have. Don, you can go first, sir.
All right, guys. As you know, I'm the social media Sasquatch here is crawling back into the cave until draft season rolls around again. But in the interim, if you have anything for me or you just want to ask some draft or Debbie questions, I'm always available at the Rider Dynasty Communique. Any of the guys will get any information to you. And if you specifically request it, we'll read what you write on air, as long as it's not like horrible or something.
That is correct. As long as it is not horrible. Oh, well, maybe if it is. Matthew Walters.
You can mainly find me at Twitter at Fantasy Ferret there. Final thoughts. Hey, remember, the off season is long. There's going to be an opportunity made, and you need to be on your waivers to pick up that player, i.e. James Robinson last year.
Pay attention. Listen to beat reporters. I'm at JJ Wenner on Twitter. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Matthew, for coming on. It always means a lot when you give up time to sit around and talk football with me. Thank you to all of you out there for listening. We really appreciate it. So from all of us to all of you, be safe, be well, and remember, never say anything to make a meeting longer or cut a happy hour short. Boat drinks, my friends. Boat drinks.